Thank you for listening to an audio recording from the Midwest Genealogy Center's Tell Me a Story program, an initiative dedicated to preserving America's history through the timeless practice of oral storytelling. To learn more about the Tell Me a Story program, including how you can add your own story to the collection, visit MidwestGenealogyCenter.org/tellmeastory. On behalf of the Midwest Genealogy Center and Mid-Continent Public Library, we hope you enjoy the following story.
This is Kathy Smith, and today is August 17th, 2021. I'm at Lee Summit Elementary School, and I'm here with Kelly Eames, who is a teacher here at the school, and we'll be interviewing her about her experiences with the COVID. Kelly, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
My name is... I have taught in Lee Summit. I started in 1988. I taught here for 5 or 6 years at Pleasant Lee Elementary. Then I took a big bridge of time off to be a stay-at-home mom. And then I came back, gosh, about 15 years ago, I think. Maybe more. 16. And I've been here at Lee Summit Elementary in 6th grade ever since. I live in downtown. I have 4 kids that went to the schools through Lee Summit, and it's a community that I love.
Okay. Well, thank you, Kelly. And so tell us, now we talked earlier before the recording began about I'm a Facebook friend of yours, and you are very eloquent in your postings and about everything, every subject matter. And really paid close attention to the comments you made about COVID and how you, as a teacher, had to learn a whole new set of everything. I mean, doing the Zoom and all the different platforms and all that. So could you tell us a little bit about that, how it began for you? When was the first... first notice that you got? When was the first, hello, it's going to happen, this is what we have to do?
Sure. So when COVID first was a thing, of course, it was at the end of the year before last year. And so we were getting ready for spring break, and we were told that we would have an extra long spring break because of this COVID, that they were going to try to keep everybody home a few weeks, and there was just going to be a 2-week spring break. And then they quickly realized that, oh, wait, this is not leaving. So then it turned into, let's worry about everybody, the kids' mental health, make sure they're eating. We need to keep our families safe. Check on them. So the end of that year was really not as much about academics as about this very brand new scary thing. If you remember, that's when nothing was open. That's when the news was 24/7, just very scary, especially if you're a kid, kind of repeat things, and we knew we had families struggling. So we ended the year at home virtually, but really it was more about checking in and do you see your students when you're talking to them? Did they eat lunch? You know, you're just checking, pardon me, on that. Fast forward to August of last year, and suddenly we were still in this, which just, if you would have told me in June that in August we would still be struggling to go back to school, I would have not believed you. And so right as the school year is starting, the parents had to pick if they wanted to be online or in person. And so we had enough pick that they wanted to be online, that some teachers had to be asked to become online academy teachers. And at our building, there's only 2 of us, and 1 of us had to go online. So that lucky person was me. So it was a huge growing curve for me. I felt pretty comfortable. I felt pretty comfortable with technology. I'm not an expert by any means, but I felt like I knew enough. But then all of a sudden I'm navigating things I've never had to do before. I'm in meetings, and they kept all these, we learned as a district and as teachers and educators and the tech people, kids learn faster than adults with technology. So you would figure out as you were doing something, the kids were a step ahead, making it not as successful sometimes. So then they'd have to go in and problem solve that. So, for example, if you had, we had meeting rooms. Well, then we found out the kids could meet in the meeting rooms without an adult present. And so they had to fix that. And so there's just, and they did. I mean, the technology responded quickly. We just all were muddling through that first month or two. My class would laugh because if I would have the sound go out or something happen, I would be walking down the hall with my computer looking for the tech person in the building, and I'm talking to my students, like, okay, let's go find Mr. Steve, and we're looking to get that help. And so somebody commented, probably around December, they were like, we haven't seen Mr. Steve in such a long time, because, you know, after about 2 months, we just really got our groove, and it got much better. But it was a big learning curve, and that was not even the hardest part. Like, the hardest part was just reworking all of your curriculum, everything you've ever done as an educator, every game, every learning activity, every discussion, everything had to be reworked into a platform that could be done online. And not everything translated online easily, and so there was a lot of reinventing what I'd done for so many years. So that was different.
So I always, my heart went out to you, especially on those late night posts.
Yeah.
You know, I could I was trying to think of myself. I'm a single mom, and I thought, my God, how are these parents who are in that situation dealing with that? Their kid is home, and they have to be at work. Mm-hmm. And so what did some of the families do?
So, and that was part of the problem. So, and totally understood. So I had sixth graders, so that is an age that if parents had a job they had to go to in person and could not afford a babysitter, by sixth grade they were letting them stay home alone to do the schooling. And for some kids, that was great. They had that independent drive and ability to do what needed to be done. But for some kids, that they just weren't ready for that responsibility. There's college students that struggle with online classes. And so I did have students that struggled with attendance, showing up. You would see they had a video game on in the background. So that was hard. And there was just had to be so much communication between parents. Like, I would send emails every single class. I had students for 5 classes a day. And I sent emails after every single class to the parent and the student if they didn't show up to class. So if a kid was truant, a parent might get 5 emails that day. You know, oh, I missed you in math today. Make sure you check the folder for what your work is. Because they wanted parents to be aware that their child had missed class.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that I saw, I had one girl, and she was actually delightful and really worked hard to be where she was supposed to be all the time. But sometimes she was in charge of her little brother when her parents were both at work. So she would sit there with her, for her classes, with her, you know, 3-year-old brother on her lap. And he's talking and, you know, and you're trying to continue the class, but honor that she's doing the best she can at 11 mm-hmm. to keep her 3-year-old brother busy and occupied during the class sessions. And so, we all had to give each other a lot of grace. They certainly gave me grace as a teacher to learn what worked communication-wise, class-wise, where to put expectations, and I had to give them a lot of grace with being tardy, setting alarms to get to class, doing work, turning it in the right place. I mean, it was just so much new for all of us.
What about the families that couldn't afford the technology of Wi-Fi? How was that?
The district worked really well if parents reached out. They had programs that would help provide hotspots for families that didn't have technology. Obviously, we're a one-to-one district, so the students all had a charger. They all had a computer. They had the hard technology at home. And then the district worked with anybody who needed it for Wi-Fi. Now, that being said, some Wi-Fi was better than others. I had one student that was a shared custody student, who was in Colorado part of the year and then here part of the year. So she was doing class from Colorado, and we were having to try to like scan and work and send it differently. And she sometimes had some issues when she was away with technology. I had a few that, like I said, it was hard for them for videos and stuff. Like they could get on and they could hear, but they couldn't run enough and a lot of it is because there were other children in the home. So they would have four or five people using the internet at the same time. So we just had to make it work.
Oh my gosh.
A few times we had to accept that if it was a busy time, that child may have to do, like I had a few kids that had to do the work earlier in the day or later in the day because their parent or somebody needed the bulk of the Wi-Fi during the day.
Oh my gosh. So one teacher I interviewed said that when it all started, he was familiar with the various platforms because of he was keeping up in his master's program.
Uh-huh.
And so there's not only Zoom, but there's a Microsoft one, and there's like, you know, I don't know how many of them are out there now. So he was familiar with all that. So he just made a decision that whatever the grade was that the kid had when all that stuff started, that was a grade they were going to end up with, because he didn't want any of his students to really suffer. I mean, they had to do the work, of course,
right,
but not be slackers or anything like that. But he knew that it was going to be really difficult for some kids. So what do you think about that idea? Or how did your students,
well,
in terms of their grades and stuff?
So our grades in elementary school, it's standards-based grading. So we just reported on standards. So did they master the skill or not? And so that was, if they didn't master it, I did indicate it was not mastered. So, for example, dividing fractions. The student was making a lot of effort. They were showing me that they were getting it, but it's probably a student that would have gotten it in person. They were really, really working, and I could see glimmers of them trying. Then that would have been like a progressing, like, yes, they're working on it, but they're not there yet. And then the students that weren't doing anything were experiencing difficulty. As far as grades for middle school and high school, that would be an area that I didn't have.
Okay.
I don't think the grade, I mean, obviously a grade is just what we report to students and parents. This is where you're at this time. This is what you're doing right now. I think it's important that they don't see that as an indication of their overall ability. It's like, here's where you're at. This is what you're doing. For some kids, where you were at and what you were doing during this time was not very successful. For other kids, it was good. So I don't think I think what would be important, or what I hope my students felt, even my students who were all E's, and I had some that were all E's, they experienced difficulty all year. They never really got it going. We had a lot of conversations about, as you return to person, here are the ways to really boost your success, to get it going, so that they don't see themselves as like, oh, I'm always going to experience difficulty. It was just, this is a really hard platform for you. These are the reasons that it appeared that you weren't successful. Here's how we can change that. And so just to work with them in that way.
So tell me, not having been a sixth grader for quite a few years now, what kind of classes do you have in sixth grade?
All the, you know, reading, writing, spelling, math, social studies, science, just all your basic, and then art, music, PE are their specials. I'm not in charge of those, luckily. So they do math. I always tell them, like, sixth grade math today used to be eighth grade math when I was in school. Like, math has really upped its game in elementary school, and that's true for all of them. Like, I'm amazed at what sixth graders do in math. And then, you know, the same as said, like, it's a rigorous curriculum, and so I'm glad to be in person this year. Rigorous is good in person.
And then what about history classes?
History, I love how they recently, it's been a couple of years now, changed our map of our curriculum in social studies so that we have a longer amount of time to go over a time period. So when I first taught my first year, I remember I taught in fifth grade at PLE in 1988. I taught early explorers, and I was supposed to get all the way to 1960. And the few years I had that curriculum, I never quite got to 1960. Like that, there's just so much. So now it's changed a little bit over the years, but what we have now, and I've just really loved it, is like I have a second quarter, the whole quarter is westward expansion. So everything about westward expansion, we can really go into detail, really talk about some really important, significant events in American history for more than a mention. You know, it isn't just like, oh, this was the Indian Removal Act. This was the Pony Express. I can spend a week on some of those more important things to pull out of that. I have a whole quarter on Civil War. I have a whole quarter on Reconstruction to civil rights and women getting the right to vote. Like, it's just such a better feel to feel like you can go in depth with some of these things in social studies.
That is really good, because I remember when I first volunteered here, and actually got involved with the museum years and years ago. That's one thing we always were sad about, that there wasn't more emphasis on local history. And so now, I mean, I'm really happy to hear the way that that's, because
yeah,
there's an opportunity.
Yeah, and I think fourth grade has a really, third or fourth, has a really in-depth look at. And then I think all grades, K through 12, have a Founders Day kind of curriculum where they do a little, it's not a big in-depth thing, but they do a little lesson and talk a little bit about local history. So
tell me some of the more humorous aspects of platform learning and things that went wrong. I mean, the possibility of things going wrong and what actually did go wrong, and then how those things were fixed.
Well, so one of the things that used to, in fact, I made a post one time about it, I think. We videotaped ourselves for our lessons, not the whole class always, but the lesson itself, and posted it in the class so that if a student wasn't there, they could go back and watch it. And when you video, it assigns just a random shot of you for the cover, so that when they, you know, when they pull it up, there's this cover shot. Well, it's a split second kind of shot of you randomly talking. And there was one day in particular, every single one of mine, if you worked to have the most unflattering pictures taken, you couldn't have done better. Like, they were hideous. And there's no way to change them. You would have to totally redo the whole lesson in an artificial setting to not post them. And so I was like, all right, guys, sorry, this is what we got. Like, it was so bad. And they were laughing. But there was a lot. I had a lot of, they would tease me about some of my pictures because I tend to be a fairly enthusiastic speaker, especially read aloud. When I would do read alouds, oh my goodness, I would think, oh, I'm nailing this. This is like Academy Award winning. And then I would look at the picture and it would be some just hideous, you know, contorted. So that was one thing that was kind of funny. I would do, you know, we did breakout rooms, which are rooms where you would be in the big group all together and you could pick who you wanted in each room, and I would be navigating that. Then you hit a button, and it sends them all to the room, and they do whatever assignment or whatever you've told them to do in these breakout rooms, kind of like small groups in the classroom, but on the computer. And then you can hit a button, and they all come back. And we had some mishaps with, especially the first week or two of breakout rooms, where kids wouldn't go, because it magically makes them opens a door for them, but they have to walk through it. So I'd be sitting there talking to a small group and some kids still in the main classroom, and just some of that kind of stuff took us a week or two to navigate well. The first time we had a thing called, I think it was just called Whiteboard, But it's where anybody could have access to all we could write. So I could say, all right, on this whiteboard, I want, when I call your name, I want you to add, you know, whatever, add a noun on the board. And people could do that. But I knew the first time everybody would just want to draw pictures. So I thought, okay, I'm going to introduce this. We're going to talk about how it works, what the rules are, and tell them to draw a picture. And they were just ridiculously excited. And I had people drawing all over each other's stuff and erasing each other's stuff. Like, it's like, okay, whoa, we're going to need some ground rules. Like, just little things like that where you kind of open the cork and then you're like, oh, got to think this through again. We need a little more direction. So,
and so then when they were developing all these platforms for teachers to use, did they just upload it into your computer and they say, here it is? Or how did you learn about it? I mean, how?
As I trial by fire, is that what they call it? No, a lot of it, you know, there obviously wasn't time for training. There wasn't time to bring every, and we weren't getting together anyway. So there wasn't time to say, come together, we're going to show you how to use this. It was, this is what's available. They would often make a video. So I did get a feeling of what it was like for kids to have to learn everything in this way, which was not fun. So it'd be like a video where we got the basics and then just practicing it, using it, doing it. And so, like I said, the first couple times sometimes were disastrous, but eventually we'd get it together.
Well, I remember, I think it was like the first, within the first day or week or whatever it was, that the server for the...
Yes, the first day.
Yeah, first day. I thought, oh my God.
I did
too. So tell me about that.
Oh my gosh, I had forgotten about that. Yes. So, I mean... You know, when I first found out I had to be online, I was really, really sad because I'm a relationship kind of teacher. I'm a in-person kind of teacher. So I was like, oh. But by that first day, I was kind of excited. I was like, all right, I got this. And I had my whole day planned. I had gotten moved, so I wasn't in my classroom. I was in a little office. Had it all decorated cute so the kids could see the background. So I was, like, nervous and excited. And I sign in, and within 5 minutes, the whole thing crashes. And I'm getting emails after emails, like, "What? We can't get on, and it's not working." And it was Schoology, the platform we were using. Originally, we were going to use that system to be together, because they had one too, kind of like Google Meets, but it was Schoology. And I ended up using Google Meets all year after that. We all did, I think. And I was just like terrified, like, oh my gosh, what if the whole year is like this? What is going to happen? But I just, you know, kind of wrote an email, sent it to parents and students. I think we tried again twice. And then finally we all were together in the afternoon, got it figured out. The district, I mean, like I said, As hard as it was, the district did work really hard to problem solve and figure out as we went. And every once in a while, after that first day, we still had the weird, like, thing. Schoology, I had times where I would have kids say, I can't get on. It's telling me I can't get on. And it would be a group of kids. Like, we don't have, it's saying no access. And so I'd say, well, go, you know, here are things you can do. Because all of our work was on Schoology. So my folders, my assignments, my directions. So if they didn't have access to that, I would just send out, I had a daily agenda. So every day they had a checklist. This is everything you need to do today. And so they got that daily. And I would, There were several things every day that you could do even if Schoology wasn't open. That way, no matter what, if they had internet, they could at least get part of their work done. And it never blocked for more than an hour or two, so it interfered, but not. They could still come to Google Meets. They could still get other things done. And then when it opened back up, they could get back on.
So was it similar to Zoom in a way? There have been some hilarious posts about Zoom on Facebook where... and skits on Saturday Night Live where they're on, they're off, and they're, you know, and their people are muted, and I mean, it's just hilarious. So did you run into a lot of that kind of stuff?
I would say my biggest, so when we had, well, when I started, I had 36 kids. So that was my class size the first day of school. And I'm looking, you're looking at your screen, and you, as the teacher, I could make it where I could see every single person at once. But it meant their face was this big, because there's 36 of those boxes on my screen. And more than half my students didn't have their camera on, either because of technology reasons, or personal reasons at home, or some just felt sixth grade is the year where they tend to hide anyway. They get kind of inhibited sometimes. And so that was an issue. So I'm looking at icons. Like, I'm looking at the, whatever they picked, because they could pick. So you could see what, like, their favorite anime character was. Or I'm looking at all these icons. And then, yeah, so I, you know, more than what was funny, and I'm sure we had those moments, that's what I remember, is just like, oh, I'm teaching too. 36 icons, and I did have some kids live, but even the ones that were live were this big. Now, throughout the year, they had windows when students could come back to in person. And so the students that did, I had a couple parents that either as they got vaccinated or as students weren't successful, parents that saw their student was really struggling, move them back to in-person. And so as my class size went down, that was really helpful. I also taught math and reading in two groups instead of just one class, so that I could have a smaller group so that I could see them in person. Or not in person, but I mean, like, I could see their mm-hmm. face and I could see their expressions. For math example, there are kids that won't ask for help, but you can see it that they need it. Well, you can't see they need it when there's 36 icons on a screen.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and when you don't see their face at all, you have to really be tuned in to know they're not asking something. And so when I divided that, I did that, a month in maybe, I thought, okay, this, I need to do more. So I just had math one, math two, reading one, reading two. And that really helped. Because then, I, even if I wasn't seeing their face, I could ask enough questions and get to people often enough in conversation. I could hear if they were getting it or not.
So it sounds like at the end of this last school year, you probably like collapsed in a corner. I mean, it's...
I was definitely, somebody said, are you going to do summer school? I was like, oh, no, I'm not. I'm going to do other things this summer.
So that class size, 36, it seems like a big class. Is that a normal size? Or
no.
Is that, is it combined?
That was in response to, I had kids from five different schools, so they weren't just kids from my school.
Oh, okay.
It was in response to that, the in-person kids, they had to really watch their class size. So they took staff, and if I were teaching in-person sixth grade, for example, they would want to make sure I didn't have too many students in my classroom, because then I couldn't follow what was mandated at the time for distance of students.
Mm-hmm.
You look around at what I could fit in here if kids have to be kept, you know, 3 feet apart, I think is what they said last year, for students at all times. You can't do that if you've got 36 kids or 30 kids. I mean, like, they tried to really watch class size in person last year. But that meant to, for staff numbers, somebody had to have a big class. So the online class sizes were big. Like I said, though, by every single time a window opened, I lost students who came back in person. Some because it wasn't working to be online for them. Some because the parents... In the spring, I lost the most, and it was because parents got vaccinated, and then they felt safer to send their kid back to school.
So what are the mandates for this year going to be?
We're going to learn a lot of that when we come back tomorrow is our first official day back. I do know it's still, like, we got a picture of if I have a room arrangement I always start my year with, and I couldn't do it this year because it has my kids too close mouth to mouth. So we got sent pictures of how we could put the desks so that it gives us the mouth-to-mouth distance that is okay. So this that you see here is okay. It's supposed to be about 3 feet mouth-to-mouth. And so, and then we have to have seating charts and know at all times, you know, who's sat by who and who was next to who. And so that the record-keeping of COVID, I'm sure any teacher would tell you, was kind of difficult. So we were allowed to do running club last year, and I'm one of the sponsors for that. And but we had to make sure we knew exactly who was there and who ran by who. I mean, just all those kinds.
So what is running club?
Running club, our PE teacher sponsored a running club, and it was just for kids who wanted to learn to jog or run. And so he and one of our other teachers and myself sponsor, and I am what they call straggle patrol. So they would run with Jenna and Coach Berg, and then when they would like get winded, or because a lot of kids had never run before, kind of like be done running, they would walk with me. I was the walker.
Okay. So then after the in-person classes were over, what did you have to do in terms of cleaning up or wiping down or, you know, how did that, or policing the area, how did that go?
Right. So I know in art, music, and PE, they had to clean between every group of kids. So they built in a little extra time for that to wipe down everything. Last year, I had to move, all teachers in our building, I think, had to move rooms last year. So last year, the first week of school, we're all scrambling to, I mean, the first week, not, we didn't have kids yet. We came back, we had this like, okay, here we go. So all the teachers, this room, which has been my room for years now, was a first grade classroom last year, so they could spread the first graders out. I had to pack, get rid of, store, get rid of my whole entire classroom. I could keep one wall of stuff, and so everything else was empty for her. And so I kept this wall, crammed as much in here as I could, took the rest to my garage. Every teacher did that. Then we came back, and this year we had to switch it all back and get our old classroom back and redo that. So that was a ton of work. As far as the cleaning between groups, I'm not thinking we have to do that now. I know the custodians clean every night. They disinfect every night.
So just for the record, there are several shelves
of
books that I'm looking at. And so that all had to be packed up and found other homes for the purposes of the moving things around.
I still have stuff in my garage. My husband, I think, thinks, when is she going to take this to school? But yeah, it was overwhelming. Because we weren't expecting it. It was, and all, I'm sure most teachers that had to switch rooms would say that. And I totally got it. Like, I was happy to do it because I knew the first grade was coming back earlier. Last year, when we started with just K through 3 in person. So they wanted that to be the biggest classrooms. And I am fortunate to have one of the bigger classrooms. So no complaints that I had to share. But it was a lot of work.
Oh, my gosh. And so I'm looking at all these books. So do you have, like, an inventory
No. It's honor system. When I first taught, I had a checkout system. And I had students check out books. And what I found was, like, at the end of the year, I would probably be missing a handful of books at the most that got lost or fell in the bathtub or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of work to keep a system, even if I assigned it to a student. And then I realized when one year I just didn't have a system. I'm just like, borrow what you want, put it back when you're done. And most kids do. And I don't think I lost any more books than I did when there was a system. And the bottom line is these probably over 50% of these books are books that were my own children's books. I had avid readers as children. So they've lived the life they were meant to live. If some kid loved the book and takes it home and doesn't bring it back, I don't care. Mm-hmm. I I love books. I love reading. Mm-hmm. I want them to love books and love reading. And so I want it to feel really like this is our classroom. This is our, you know, these are your books and my books. And when you're done, I want you to give it back so somebody else can share it. Just like at home, mm-hmm. you know, you put your toys back and other people play with them. But while we're here, it belongs to all of us. I have an area up front. It's a share area. And they know anything in there. It's got colored pencils and paper and just markers. Anything that they don't have, they can go borrow. I just ask. They put it back when they're done. And they don't have to ask, can I have a borrow pencil? Can I borrow, you know, I can't find my ruler. They just know they can go to the share area. And I found by doing that, they know that's fair game. They are not allowed anywhere near that. So, you know, it's like
that meaning teacher desk. Yeah.
Yeah. Teacher desk is all mine, which right now it's got incoming teacher presence on it. But yeah, because it is their classroom too.
So I think one of the most fabulous thing that's going on right now is that Facebook page has been developed for teachers. It's an unofficial R7 school district page, and teachers post a list on there of what they're needing for their classrooms, and people have been responding. It's fantastic. So have you been the recipient of some of those?
I have not posted anything this year. I feel like I've taught a long time, obviously, and I really feel like right now, if people are reaching out, I have students and families that probably could use that more than me.
Mm-hmm.
So I have been lucky enough over the years to have over a dozen PEAK grants that gave me things for my classroom. I've been the recipient many times of things to help me in my classroom. I haven't reached out this year. I just feel like there's a lot of need everywhere, and so I'm hoping that maybe if there's a need greater than mine. Well, as much as I love pretty pencils and sticky notes and all those kind of things, those are awesome, and I love any generous donations. I think it's amazing that people are doing that.
Oh, I do too. That's a great way for teachers to start off the year, really, mm-hmm. a positive note where they may be a little overwhelmed with like, oh my gosh, what is this year going to bring? Are we going to be, you know, unknowns, yeah. you know, and all that kind of stuff. So I think it's really cool.
And I like that you said positive, because I do think, you know, if people wonder like how to support teachers, it's so little. And I know last year, one of my students, I think it was Valentine's Day, she said, gosh, for Valentine's Day, I always bring my teacher a Starbucks coffee, but you're at home or you're at school and I'm at home and can I do that? And I was like, well, sure. So she dropped off, she came up to school and they dropped it in the office and it came back. It was like such a little thing, but the fact that they went out of their way and did something mm-hmm. little like that, every once in a while I have a student that, you know, they'll say, what do you want? And I know a lot of students that I have, certainly not all of them, but a lot have some budget restraints. And so I always try to name something small, like, oh, I love Milky Way with caramel, or I love Diet Coke. And so sometimes just even that, like a Milky Way with caramel or a diet, just something little,
mm-hmm.
but with that intention of appreciation and noticing, like, thank you for working so hard. Or, you know, I got a couple cards and emails and letters from parents last year that were really uplifting, and it helped to know, like, they get it. They get that I'm working hard. They, mm-hmm. you know it's not perfect, but they're acknowledging that this is a hard situation.
A lot of times there's such negative media around all of it, and it's, you know, we don't want to do this, and we don't want to do that, and all that kind of stuff. So it's really heartwarming to hear.
Yeah.
I pretty much knew that was probably going on, you know, especially in this wonderful little school. But it's great to know that kids understand the importance of giving of themselves.
And I think we have to be careful, because there is a lot of negative around COVID in general, and it is horrible, and it is negative. However, I think when the message is being sent all day long, you know, that, oh, we're at such a detriment, COVID's ruining the education of everybody, and blah, 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 we're sending this message to kids, it's almost like saying, you're damaged because of this, instead of a message being sent that, wow, we're behind in curriculum, but you're gaining skills nobody else has ever had to gain before. Mm-hmm. I know you're going to be able to put those skills to good use. Now let's catch up on this curriculum. Like, some messages being sent, it's not that they're not true, but they're not. I don't think it is beneficial to phrase it in a negative context and to act like the fact that we're behind in curriculum nationwide, not every student, but certainly groups of students in every district in our country and grand, likely worldwide, have gaps that they missed because of COVID. But to act like that's the end of the world, or I saw one study that talked about what that's going to do to their earning potential. I'm like, they're 11. It doesn't have to do anything to their earning potential. You know, they can, let's say a kid breaks a leg right before they learn to walk, and they don't learn to walk at one. They learn to walk at 18 months. Well, they could still be a runner when they grow up. Like, just because we've had this little broken time, it doesn't mean they can't still do every single thing on time to the best of their ability, like have we've always done. And I just hope we start sending that message to kids.
Well, and I think in terms of kids that are interested in working in the technology field, developing all of these platforms, I mean, that had to start from square one practically. Mm-hmm. And then people had to think about that. So then now these kids that are learning these platforms, mm-hmm. you know, maybe they'll, hey, I'm inspired, and so I'm going to go to Summit Tech, right. and then I'm going to go on from there, and I'm going to learn how to do this. Now, my son is an example. He graduated from high school in 94, and so teaching English as a second language. And then he got, in the past 3 or 4 years, he's administering tests to students who want to study abroad. So they had to shut down. He had to take the bullet train to Beijing, and he was there like all week, and then would come home on the weekends. Well, then they stopped doing the in-person kind of thing, and mm-hmm. he, you know, at his age had to learn all those platforms, but he did it. You know, and now it's helped him make his own little cottage industry.
Yeah.
You know, where he can do everything online now. And he learned 2 or 3 different platforms, and he can talk about them without just, I know Zoom. You know, that's a lot of people say, well, I know Zoom. Well, there's a lot of other stuff out there, and you don't really know Zoom. I mean, you know, it's like Zoom is crazy, I think. But anyways. I'm one of those that never can get the right thing, and I see these people flipping back and forth from their voice, the mute, the pictures. I mean, it's just hilarious.
Well, and now they have and the kids loved that during the year, where they could, like, have different backgrounds up, that it could be on a beach, or they could have a cool house behind them.
Yeah.
And I had one student, and when you talk about the inventiveness that – he was working, he wants to maybe be an animator, and he was working and he made his own self into an animation. So he would show up to class animated.
Oh my gosh.
So, yeah, definitely. I think we just need to always show kids a positive path forward, regardless of where we're at and what struggles are there or ahead or hopefully mostly behind us now.
Well, Kelly, thank you very much for your time.
Sure.
And those are great words to end on. And you have a great day.
Thank you.
This is Kathy Smith. Thank you.